Not all podcasters are created equal. This is the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Green Gab Podcast, a place to gab with people rocking it in green. Green homes, green living, green companies. Join Marla Esser-Close, green home coach and author of Living Green Effortlessly, Simple Choices to a Better Home, and Tony Pratt, the director of builder relations at The Sound Room. Here are your hosts, Marla and Tony.
I'm Erin McKee. I work with Next Project Studio, a designer remodeling firm here in St. Louis, Missouri, and I'm here with Marla and Tony from the Green Gab podcast.
There you go.
Fantastic. Okay, guys, so tell me a little bit about how the Green Gab got started.
You want his version or mine?
Yes, both.
Well, I had an opportunity. I had joined a group of women called Business Women Connecting in the St. Louis area a little over a year ago. A paid networking and support group, not just a networking meeting you go to. But so when I was talking with the founder and the owner of that group, Kate Brockmeyer, she said, you know, I've also got this other business that we're going to be offering some podcast packages in the future. Not sure when we're going to get it done, but, you know, it sounds like it might be up your alley. I said, sure, let me know when you get it done. So fast forward a few months, and she says, hey, we got this going. You want to try some? And I'm like, sure, why not? And did my very first podcast on the phone while I was in Oklahoma City, and my two guests were in the studio. So I had no idea what it was like to be in the studio, but we just had a ball. So we ended up doing six more, and out of those first six, Tony was on two of them.
Wow.
So by show six, I said...
Seven.
Well, we were talking, but at the end of show six, it's 07.
I know, but episode seven was my second one.
Your second one. Sorry, I was thinking it was six. But by then, we were talking about him coming on as co-host. So show nine, he joined me as co-host. She then decided that she really wanted to focus on her other business, got out of the podcasting business. We were ready to go it on our own because we were hooked by then. So we're building our own library on SoundCloud and figuring out all the social media. And then Tony met Mike with Two Guys Talking Podcast Network. And
at a podcasting meetup.
Convinced That's me awesome. That Mike was our path. And here we are. I think we recorded podcast 50 today.
Oh, wow.
Gotcha. All right, so that's her version.
What's your version?
We kind of lost track during the home show, but we recorded 43 episodes before we came to the home show. So anyway, but now you're going to get Tony's version.
Okay, so now the truth. 90% of what she said is accurate. Actually, 99% of what she said is accurate.
But here's where we disagree.
This is exactly where we disagree. Prior to this, Marla and I have known each other for quite some time through different committees. And I guess the fall before the podcast started, Marla needed to write an article on technology.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
So she came into the sound room, spent some time there, walked around, you know, talked to people, got the demo stuff to get an idea of the different types of technology so she could write the article. Well, out of that sprung us getting together every Tuesday for coffee in the morning and throwing different ideas out at each other. You know, you always have to have somebody in the industry that you're friends with that you can have those conversations about. And our conversations would just go on for, you know, hour and a half.
They'd kick us out.
Till we eventually had to go to work. One Tuesday, I'm sitting there, and she's like, what are you doing tomorrow? Nothing. Good. You're coming on the podcast. I'm like, I'm what? She's like, yes, this podcast I just started, you're coming on. So I did not have a choice.
I was desperate for a guest.
That was episode 3. You had to be desperate.
But we are such good intellectual sparring partners. And I know I feel like the chemistry between us as far as how we're able to approach a topic is really, really unique. And I feel incredibly fortunate to have had this time. And I, you know, who knows what the future looks like, but I just feel we bring just a really cool element to how we can talk about stuff.
Well, it's not only that. We're like a MasterCard logo, okay? We really are.
It's really specific.
Otherwise known as a Venn diagram.
Yeah. So there's that part of us that we both kind of see the same way. There are some things that Marla see different, and there are some things that I see different. But, I mean, that's what makes the conversation fun. we don't see everything through the same lens. You know, we see things at different angles, from different political persuasions, you know, whatever. We can sit there, look at it, and Marla could have, you know, a great idea or this great opinion about something, and I'll look at it and say, well, you know, I agree with 99% of that, but this one little part. Let's talk about this, you know. This is what I'm thinking. This is why I'm thinking it. You know, it's not just a we'll throw out an opinion, but it's the why. You know, Marla has the engineering background. I have more the economist background. You know, so we always are looking at things from a different angle, because let's face it, you know, the brains are trained for an engineer to look at something completely different than an economist.
Yeah, I like to learn by reading. I read a lot and I listen to a lot of podcasts. I don't watch a lot of TV. And Tony, on the other hand, has done a lot of university related studying programs and working on advanced degrees. So we both have this really, really intense intellectual curiosity, but we come at it from completely different ways. And if there's one piece of advice I could give you, it is to be well-read. Because the more topics you understand how to get in on the conversation, it doesn't matter if you agree or don't agree. And a lot of times we don't agree.
Yeah.
But we have, which is why I think I call us intellectual sparring partners, because we can get that conversation going. And if we have a guest that's a little nervous about being on the show, we can get the banter going enough that they almost always lose it.
Well, and not only that, I think part of what our job is to do is to have that conversation and, you know, affirm it when we agree on something, but when we disagree on something, to present all sides of everything. And the idea is let the listener kind of figure out their path, you know. Say, look, this is the options. Now it's up to you to do some research on your own.
And make it better.
And make a better decision.
You have the information to make a better or a different choice if you want to. And that's really what we want people to do. And that's why I called my book. I mean, I didn't have a final say on the title. The publisher did. But Simple Choices to a Better Home. And that was just kind of how we've approached it, is if we can give you the knowledge and lead you to the water, then you can decide if you want to drink. So anyway, that was a really long-winded answer to your question.
That's okay. I love it. Tell me a little bit about where the passion for sustainability comes from.
Go for it, Tony. You can start, because we come from really different sides on this one, too.
All right. So I had a degree in economics from St. Louis University. That's where I did my undergrad with.
Ah, that's why you call it SLU Blue.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. From there, I kind of lucked into the industry I fell into. Not by choice, but just as I was finishing up school, I had a job working for a company called Organized Living. Part-time job, you know, building furniture, make money to go buy beer, you know, in college. I mean, that's what you do. When I got out of college, I just happened to fall into a management job with them. I liked what I was doing. I enjoyed the fact I did not have to wear a tie every day. I could wear this type of shirt, jeans, shorts, whatever, tennis shoes. You know, I mean, this has basically been my uniform since, 1995, you know. I kind of fell into that. Along the way, I got discovered for being an interior designer. I had design capabilities. You could tell me what your vision was for a room and give me 10 minutes and, you mean this? Yeah, that's what I meant. So anyway, I ended up into the custom cabinetry industry. While I was at one company, we started to have these customers coming in that had allergies to glues, formaldehydes, things like that. So we started to have to experiment on different materials. And from there, it was right when I was starting to get into the HBA with this company, and the Green Building Council just got started. So as I'm trying to make a name for myself, I'm like, well, let's join that and see how it meshes. So I joined that, joined USGBC, and then just kind of found a little niche. Now, since then, I started working on my master's degree in sustainability and environmental management. I've got a certificate in energy management and emerging technologies. You know, I just look at things from an academic point of view. I like learning about it. My biggest goal was if I can use my intellectual abilities to possibly find better ways of using limited resources, then my job would be complete. So that's where that passion comes from. It's all about the search for the next technology. You know, if you think about it, a lot of what we do, this car, this is 19th century technology. You know, our energy usage for a home, 19th century technology. You know, so what's the 21st century technology going to look like? What's the 22nd century technology going to look like? That's what we need to try and find. And as long as the conversation is what the past was, the future will never be.
I like that. Well, I heard you so impassioned with sustainability.
It was kind of ingrained in me long before I even realized it. So my grandmother was a young woman in the Depression. And I always remembered when I was around her, you know, the waste not, want not, or use it up, wear it out. You can never remember the rest of that. Use it up, wear it out, something, something, or do without. It's a New England, an old New England proverb, but she'd always say that to us. And she'd, you know, keep balls of foil and jars and everything, because of the Depression, they had to. If you didn't have it, you would make do. Well, that's it, make do or do without. Use it up, wear it out, whatever. I'll look it up for you. Something like that. So you'd think I could remember this since it was so influential in my life. But
I guess it wasn't that influential.
Yeah, apparently not. So fast forward, I go to college. I end up coming. I'm from Oklahoma City, which is why I live there now. Well, I got married to a guy that's there, and we got tired of commuting. Anywho, but I come here to go to Washington University and in the engineering school. I just threw a funny coincidence, like I ended up not liking my math classes. I needed an engineering degree that didn't require math so I could keep my scholarship. So I end up doing a program called Engineering and Public Policy, which turned out to be amazing because it was poli sci, law, business, technology. Plus, I had a good foundation in all of the engineering curriculums. So I was still qualified to be a professional engineer if I wanted to. And I also got a certificate of energy. Matter of fact, way back, I'm 55, so I graduated from high school in 1980. I'm a young 55. But I had a certificate in energy, and we did an audit of an energy audit program in Baldwin, Missouri in 1984. So this has been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the other senior paper I wrote was on telecommuting, and I was one of the first people to telecommute. Yeah, I'm a prophet. So I get the degree and the certificate. I end up going to work for IBM, doing marketing and sales and technical marketing and sales. And don't really do marketing engineering until like the tail end of my career with IBM, like 10 years later. I was there 15 years. So I left IBM on my maternity leave to start my first company. 4-year experience was great. Didn't make it. A lot of companies don't make it. But, you know, learned so, so much. But I decided at that point in time I wanted to raise kids. So I do freelance projects, part-time work. I was outplacement consultant. I ran a website for my sorority, Pi Beta Phi. I did a full year of volunteer work, working with the Maradona Registry Program. All these amazing experiences. And while I was at Pi Phi, a friend of mine had an early opportunity to retire from IBM. He came to me because of my career outplacement experience and said, hey, I'm too young to quit working. What can I do? So we started going through all these business models, and he loved, he was an environmentalist and very good at it and had redone a lot of things in his home and really super concerned about the environment, energy efficiency. And so we settled on this model that he wants to start an energy consulting practice. So I'm like, cool, you know, this is really great. You're going to get a chance to go do this. He goes, well, come, you know, come help me out. I'm sure he will contest that it wasn't exactly that way, but I was really not ready to leave my job. So he goes off and starts this, and I'm kind of thinking he's going to be a solo practitioner, just kind of do a thing. 6 months later, I get a phone call. Hey, I just hired this young lady who just graduated from Washington University, and I could, yeah, we could use some guidance here because I've never really had anybody work for me. We come help us out a little bit. So just, you know, as a friend, I started kind of coaching them both on how to work together. Well, within a year, I'd come on to help him with marketing and sales and getting the company going. And name of his company is still around, Butterfly Energy Works. It's Gary Steps. Gary's gone really deep green, and he works a lot with the Passive House certification program, which is a very, very energy efficient program if you look it up. He and I got involved with green certification of homes working in conjunction with Laclede Gas, who used to verify the green building program here with the Home Builders Association. And our first big project that we worked on with the HBA and Laclede Gas was the Extreme Home Makeover House in Shrewsbury. I don't remember the exact year. We were so disappointed when they ran the show on TV, they never mentioned that it was green certified. And this was prior to 2008. So it was 2007, 2008. And it was a really big deal to have a green certified home then, and they didn't even mention it on the TV show.
Wah, wah.
But here's the cool part. So there was three kids in the family that the home was built for, and the two twin boys were pretty, they had some very big physical challenges, and they walked with walkers, and so the house was designed so they could get around easily, wide hallways, and they had track system in the bathroom and stuff. And I have heard, anecdotally speaking only, I don't have any way to back this up, but I have heard that those two little boys have done really, really well, and they credited a lot to the fact that they had a home that really supported them, and it really gave them an environment where they could thrive. And that, OMG, that makes me tear up. And that's, you know, that's the heart part of this business. And I think that if there's anything that Tony and I have found in this side of being kind of the softer side of the home building business, is that when you start talking with people that are really passionate about green and sustainability and how we can do things out of the box and stuff, you get into that whole heart thing, and that's cool. So, full circle, I branched off. The gentleman I was working with at Butterfly Energy Works, we decided I needed a break. It was going through some family issues and some personal issues health-wise, and I took a year off and got my credentials, got my lead AP, and started a business called HomeNav, which was owner's manuals for green certified homes, and was kind of built from there. I still have HomeNav, but we've morphed in the past year and a half over to Green Home Coach, and got the podcast going, and that's really become a centerpiece of the business, and we're really about getting the word out, so inspiring and educating people about what they can do and how to get it going and get that action going. And this one feels true. And I credit Tony a lot because he brings out just a really wonderful side. And, so it's been fun. Sorry, we have long answers to our questions.
Well,
but there's no easy answer, right?
No, that's okay, I get it. On that note, what can a homeowner whose knowledge of green living is limited to just like recycle your plastics in your cans and solar panels are super expensive, what can you tell them? What can they do to live more green? 101 sustainability.
Well, buy my book, buy my educational
cheaper than solar
program,
panels.
Mine, ours, my book, our program. So one of the things that we've, and it's on our table, is we have a audio and worksheet program, educational program that we're releasing in the next month or so called What Makes a Green Home Green. And it is basically that. It's Green 101 about the six, there's kind of six big categories of being green. Five of them are physical, and then one of them is operating and maintaining your home, which, oh, by the way, is really green in itself because you're making it last longer and making it work better. You're optimizing it. But those, and then we threw in a couple bonus episodes, but they are at what we call educational podcasts. They're me and Tony going through a topic like this in a conversational way, but giving people some basic vocabulary and basic concepts and talking about some actions where they can start. And that's really the key of it. And the book kind of picks up on that and doesn't go so much into the what it is, but the how you can get things going. The why people want to do this is probably the bigger answer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a part that a lot of us don't think about. Why is all the things you want for your home? Most of us want a home that's healthy, safe, and comfortable. We probably want one that's more convenient. It doesn't take a lot of time, money, and effort to take care of. And all of those things can come to us through a home that's been remodeled, repaired and replaced, or built new to green principles and practices. And it really is both. It's not just putting stuff in your house, it's how you do it. And how you do it is really important. We feel like we're kind of unique with what we're doing with the Green Gab because there's not a lot of people talking at this level that kind of is tying it all together. Mm-hmm. So anyway, sorry. I kind of pounced on that question because it's kind of
mine.
And you did a good job with it.
As a green home coach, that's really, you know, it's really what we bring to the table. And Tony and I get to just really bring this to life with the podcast. But he still has a full-time job with the sound room, and I still am pushing what we're doing and other parts of my business. I've been consulting with builders over the past 5 years and helping them to get green certification and taking them through the process. So that hands-on knowledge is huge. Mm-hmm. But it was time to do something different. So different side of it. Same stuff, different side. Mm-hmm. Tony, did I miss anything?
No, I think you hit that one pretty much on the head.
Tony, this one might be more directed at you then. What would you want home designers to know to start creating more green designs?
That's a
good
question.
So designers like interior designers or like architects or both?
It's a little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
Okay.
Like home remodelers.
Well, I would say this. You know, the first thing is make sure you have a team in place. The proper team really needs to be focused on you have contractors or trade partners that understand the building envelope. You have HVAC companies that understand air quality and proper zoning of the equipment. You really need a technology coordinator that understands the automation and is going to ask the questions of how are you living in the home. You know, the idea and where houses are going, and part of that learned behavior will help make the homeowner operate the home at its most efficient level. We can build the greatest, most high-performance home known to mankind, but you still have a human being living in it. So if we can take a lot of the behavior of that person and automate it to where they're not even thinking about it anymore, they're going to be more efficient, and you're going to have a lot more of the human interaction portion of green, whether the energy management side of it, things like that. I would say make sure that your team that's working on the house is well versed in all of this. And as a designer, you're going to first start drawing up the plans. You're going to, you know, have those initial conversations with the homeowner. But unless you are that expert in every little bit of the green part of it, you really need to pull in all of the contractors, all the trade partners, all those partnerships, and put them in front of the homeowner so they can really gauge, almost like a doctor, how are you trying to live in this? Okay, well, if this is what you're trying to do, I'm the general practitioner here. Let's bring in the specialist, and they're going to help us diagnose what needs to happen because these are what's important to you.
I like the consistent references to Grey's Anatomy, practically.
Getting all the stakeholders involved up front, including the homeowners, mm-hmm. is super important because we continually run into problems, particularly with the HVAC, the heating and air conditioning people, simply because we don't always think about all the things that happen downstream. So, and that one in particular, because we run ducted systems in many parts of the country, that's a big deal, how you design a house.
Yeah, well, not only that, they're only thinking about their system.
Their system. They're not thinking
about anything else. You have to remember, these houses are technological ecosystems. Each one of them is designed where every system has to interface and work in conjunction with the other systems.
And more complicated when you're retrofitting or renovating, because you have to take a lot more parameters into consideration. And it's way harder to remodel than it is to build new. A clean slate. Mm-hmm. But it's one of the best things. We have so much existing housing stock. You think most people are never going to live in a new home because they've got existing housing stock. So anything we can do. And when you're remodeling, is the best time to nip and tuck, do things better. Mm-hmm. You've already got stuff exposed. And what do you do? What choices do you make? If we have one word to say to anybody that's remodeling and updating, caulk.
Oh, yeah. Caulk everything.
Seal it up. A tube of caulk is your best friend. You usually can't seal an existing house up enough to need mechanical ventilation, because mm-hmm. that's kind of the term everybody gets kind of, oh my gosh, I'm going to get, we're going to be stuck in here. Yeah, but most existing homes are not built well. And I mean, just building practices have changed. It's not that it's a bad house, it's just building practices and materials have changed.
Right.
And so you're really not going to usually get to a point where it's going to be too tight, but you certainly can improve it a lot. Just sealing it up. Every time you uncover something, seal it up. Seal the joints between the lumber. Seal it between all the disparate materials. Seal it between the windows and the walls. Seal it between the floorboard and the baseboard. We even have them sealed between the joints and the different pieces of wood and the sills when we're doing remodeled houses. And by the way, you can do the National Green Building Standard for remodeled homes. It has a special chapter just for remodeled homes.
Yes, you can.
Good to
know. And I'd be happy to help you through that.
Good to know. Thank you so much.
I can help you with that.
I heard Jean Ponzi, right? I heard her mention something about how St. Louis is actually really great at sustainability. Did I hear that right? What are we doing right?
Well, we have a lot of resources that other cities don't. Whether it's people that have been educated in sustainability, like a Matt Belcher, a Kim Hibbs, a Jeff Bogart, you know, people like that. Or it's having resources like Missouri Botanical Gardens, the universities that have sustainability programs. We have a lot of general contractors that go across the country that build lead standard on projects and construction. You know, we just have a wealth of resources. But I think the main thing is, unlike the coast that it's all mandated, none of this is mandated here. So you have people that are more passionate about it, want to see it take a stronger foothold, because we do this because we want to, not because we have to.
So here's a shocker for you. So the NAHB has a green building certification system called National Green Building Standard, and the state of Missouri is number 9 overall in the entire United States with number of homes, both single family and multifamily, in that program. And we're number 4 for single family homes. Now, that's a drop in the bucket, I will tell you that. But the fact that we are doing that much is kind of a really best kept secret. We have a great history of organizations, more public organizations, being involved in sustainability here, like the Missouri Botanical Garden, like the St. Louis Zoo, like the Science Center, and our universities, and they've really knit together to build, kind of like what you're seeing for entrepreneurial efforts in St. Louis and all this around the cortex, that's kind of happened in the sustainability world as well. So it's, the more people that get involved, it becomes an exponential growth, not just linear growth.
Well, and think about it. St. Louis was the first city in the country that had an HBA pushing its own green home building certification program.
And we have one of the oldest U.S. Green Building Council chapters in the nation here, and one of the biggest.
We were either second or third city in the country, depending on who you listen to have green certified home as a checkbox on the MLS reports. So
it's not used very much, but we have it.
Yeah, it's there.
It's there.
Yeah, it is there.
And even the National Green Building Standard for NAHB, the base of that was the St. Louis Green Building Program. Everything down to the worksheet.
Yep.
I mean, when they unveiled it, I have heard that like Matt Belcher and Tom Schultz from
Laclede Gas was like, so instrumental in
what's
that.
Going on? That's our stuff. You know, like it got ripped off.
Well, it was with permission.
I know, but they could have changed a little bit.
And this, so here's another barn burner, pardon the term, is Laclede Gas, our natural gas company here in St. Louis, has been extremely instrumental in helping to push and educate people on green building.
A utility. They did all the third-party verifications. They would do all
for
the
years.
Inspections.
Yeah. And a lot of electric utilities in many cities across the country are really the ones educating consumers about energy efficiency. And people kind of scratch their heads and go, wait a second, doesn't an electric utility want to sell more electricity? And because of the way the utility industries work, no, not really, not so much. And it costs them so much money to build peak load power generation capability that they'd rather spend that money teaching you how to use less energy than they would building those peak load plants, because they're very expensive. We're also seeing massive utility grade solar and wind across the country. And we have a program, there are several programs here in Missouri that capitalize on that, mainly through buying renewable energy credits. It's here. You just, once you get into it, you start seeing how much there is. But you have to kind of dive in a little bit. We used to have a group here that kind of was the curator for everything going on green. They're no longer doing that, really. So you do have to kind of get into the system to figure it out.
Wow.
But have fun exploring.
I'm really interested.
There's a lot here.
Well, those are all my questions.
Cool.
I really appreciate you.
Sorry, we're so long.
I appreciate you taking time out to help me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Green Gab Podcast.
and for joining us on our own personal green odyssey as we change the world one Green Gab podcast at a time. What did you learn about during this episode? Tell us now by visiting our website at greengabpodcast.com. And remember to connect with us via iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. Links to do all of this are at our website, greengabpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, but more importantly, thanks for rocking it in green.
Hi, I'm Erin McKee from Next Project Studio, and you're listening to the Green Gab Podcast on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network.
There you go. There you go. You have now successfully podcasted.
Yay!
You knew we were going to do that too, didn't you?
That was fun.
Now you are.